Good afternoon, it's Mountain Edition. All the week's news from the Roaring Fork Valley coming at you in the next half hour. I'm Kristen Kay.
And I'm Allison Bechtesh. This week, permits to camp at Conundrum Hot Springs became available. They could bring big changes to the popular spot.
The Roaring Fork Valley's economy was able to weather the tough winter.
We hear from teachers who demonstrated at the Colorado State Capitol.
And ballots were mailed to voters for the Crown Mountain Park tax question.
The biggest stories from this week coming up on Mountain Edition.
Last-minute bookings saved a hard-hit tourism economy in the valley this winter.
Occupancy fell just 1.9% this year in Aspen and Snowmass. That's behind last year's record-breaking winter season. For much of the dry winter, visitor numbers were well below previous seasons, but late March bookings picked up enough to significantly close that gap. And according to the data firm Decimetrics, when compared to 16 other mountain resorts, Aspen held the highest occupancy rate of 2018. Snowmass came in third. April bookings are already ahead of 2017 numbers, with Snowmass Village getting nearly a 50% boost due to the later dates of the Disabled American Veterans Week.
Colorado's annual legislative session is nearing its May 9th closing day. Benta Berkland talks to State House reporters about some of the major pieces of legislation lawmakers are still working on.
Joining us today, we have Jesse Paul with the Denver Post and Brian Eason with the Associated Press. Only a few weeks left this session and still some top priority items they want to accomplish.
Absolutely. Really, the two biggest priorities heading into the session are still outstanding. We still don't have a transportation funding bill that's been agreed to by both sides, and we still don't have a compromise on what to do about the public pension, which has a $32 billion unfunded liability. And that's by the most optimistic estimates of how bad the debt is. So really a whole lot, as usual, actually, a whole lot is coming down to the wire at the State House.
And how likely do you think it'll be that those accomplishments will happen?
That's a great question. I mean, I don't think either side wants to end this session without a deal on these two issues. The pension especially, it's just going to cost more and more the longer they put this off. And we've seen that over the last 8 years without them acting on this issue. And I don't think people want to go to voters this fall without something to tell them that they accomplished either. But, you know, these are two complicated issues that folks are far apart on, so it'll be interesting to see whether they can pull it together.
Jesse, what are you tracking?
So right now, kind of in the waning days of the session, all of a sudden the gun issue has popped up again, specifically this idea of a red flag law, which would essentially make it so judges in certain crisis situations could take guns away from people who law enforcement, prosecutors, or family members identify as being either a threat to themselves or others. Now, this is something that's been kind of waiting in the wings here for a couple of weeks. There's been off and on discussion about it since the high school shooting in South Florida at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School. But now all of a sudden, this is really starting to come to a head, specifically because Lieutenant Governor Donna Lynn mentioned at a gubernatorial debate that the Hickenlooper administration, that the governor's administration was considering an executive action on this policy. But now there's some work going on in the legislature with some Democrats and potentially some Republicans to try and get this pushed through. But what remains to be seen is if there's Republican support for such a bill in the Senate. That's the only way that it could actually get passed onto the governor's desk.
The governor talked to the media about this issue, and it seemed like he wasn't willing to commit one way or the other.
Right. Hickenlooper has said that he's on board with the concept in general. But in terms of actually committing to whether or not he was going to do an executive action, he's kind of punted that right now to the legislature. So what remains to be seen is if there's enough time to get such a contentious policy debate passed on to him, especially when there is this partisan divide. We've seen over and over again this year in the legislature that Republicans have tried to loosen gun restrictions in Colorado and make it more possible for people to use deadly force and carry weapons in different places. So the idea that they would be on board with the piece of legislation that's so contentious, despite the fact that there is national support on this gun issue from Republicans, remains to be seen. It's a huge question that's going to go before the legislature with less than 30 days left here. So it's going to be a big policy debate, potentially the biggest one of the session.
Lots of things to pay attention to in these final few weeks. Thanks. That was Jesse Paul with the Denver Post, Brian Eason with the Associated Press. I'm Benta Berkland, and this was Capital Conversation.
Teachers rallied at the state capitol on Monday, asking for more money for K-12 schools and opposing some changes being proposed to public employee pensions. Again, Benta Berkland.
Michelle Pearson works at Century Middle School in Thornton. She was the Colorado Teacher of the Year in 2011.
We cannot continue to support quality education on the string that we're doing it right now. We have unfilled jobs. We cannot support our kids.
Colorado schools are still facing a shortfall, even though lawmakers put quite a bit more money into schools this year. Republican Senate Majority Leader Chris Hulbert says the funding is adequate.
We are, for the seventh time out of the 8 years that I've been here, increasing the amount of money that we're giving.
A bipartisan bill to stabilize public pensions is also under consideration, but there's still a lot of disagreement on how it will ultimately look, especially around issues such as defined contributions. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
Here in the Valley, teachers in the Roaring Fork and Aspen school districts demonstrated Monday morning before classes started. To learn about these so-called walk-ins, Allison sat down with reporter Wyatt Orm.
What did you hear from the teachers in Colorado? Why are they protesting?
Colorado is 46th in the nation when it comes to average salaries for teachers. 95% of rural educators are paid below the cost of living. This is according to Carrie Dahlman. She's the president of the Colorado Education Association, which is one of the state's teachers' unions. According to the Constitution, the state is supposed to increase education funding with the rate of inflation, and they haven't done that. The result is that Colorado's public education has essentially an $828 million IOU from the state. So yesterday, a committee in the House was discussing this IOU question. Another was talking about overhauling the pension fund, which is where all these teachers have their retirements. So a lot was at stake yesterday.
Okay, so that's what we were seeing at the State House. What was happening here locally?
Teachers were standing outside their schools before classes started. They were holding up signs. Here's Rhonda Tatham. She's the president of the Roaring Fork Community Education Association, which means she's the local liaison for the union for the Colorado Education Association. She's also a teacher at Carbondale Middle School.
We had signs. We were out there. We were wearing our red for public ed. And then we walked in. All of the teachers walked into each building together and started their day.
Okay, so we didn't see any disruption to the school day yesterday. Will the teachers end up striking?
They're not striking. All the teachers who showed up to the Capitol yesterday had taken a personal day. The truth is, striking isn't really an option for a lot of teachers in Colorado. Carrie Dahlman, the president of the Colorado Education Association, told me that most teachers in the state are covered under collective bargaining contracts, and a lot of those have a no-strike clause in them.
Oh.
The Roaring Fork School District is not one of these, so teachers there could strike if they wanted to. But when I spoke with Rhonda Tatham, she basically said, what's the point? It's not our district's fault that the state isn't allocating enough money to public education. So I think the answer is no. We're probably not going to see in Colorado what we just saw in places like Arizona and West Virginia.
So if they can't strike, do teachers in Colorado have any teeth behind these requests?
I asked that question to Carrie Dahlman, and here's what she had to say.
You know, our leverage is to bring these classroom educators and parents and community members down here to the Capitol. If we need to come back, we're going to come back and make sure that our elected representatives hear us.
So as these issues continue through the House, we'll see if teachers feel compelled for even more action.
Okay, thank you, Wyatt.
You're welcome.
You are listening to Mountain Edition from Aspen Public Radio News. I'm Allison Bechtesh.
And I'm Kristen Kay. Allison, if someone hears a story right here on Mountain Edition and they want to hear it again, how can they do it?
They can head to our website, aspenpublicradio.org.
There you can listen again to local shows like Valley Roundup, check out our upcoming events, and see pictures of the Aspen Public Radio gang.
This week, you can check out a beautiful photo by environment reporter Elizabeth Stewart Severy of the Conundrum Hot Springs.
Check it out by going to aspenpublicradio.org.
For the first time, backpackers headed to Conundrum Hot Springs this summer will need a permit to camp in the area and can buy them starting this week. In the past, up to 300 people camped on busy weekends at the hot springs. Now there's a maximum of 68 people who can stay overnight. The U.S. Forest Service will increase their presence at the trailhead, along the trail, and at the hot springs. The agency will have one additional ranger and two more interns than they employed last summer. Those positions are funded by grants. Anyone who plans to camp and doesn't have a permit will be turned around or could be fined. Katie Nelson with the Forest Service says the goal is to educate hikers about the change ahead of time.
We do have some additional education through this permit system, so we're hoping that kind of slides us to a more positive direction.
Campers can watch a short video about Leave No Trace ethics and will need to sign a waiver acknowledging that the group will follow Forest Service regulations to protect the ecosystem.
Earth Day is this Sunday, but celebrations kick off in Aspen this evening. As Elizabeth Stewart Severy reports, there's a wide range of activities available in the Roaring Fork Valley.
The Aspen Center for Environmental Studies is teaming up with retailer Outdoor Voices to start off Earth Day festivities with a community cleanup this afternoon beginning at 3:30. The mantra for this year's Earth Day is End Plastic Pollution. But participants in Aspen will focus on microtrash, that is, tiny bits of garbage like bottle caps and paper scraps. The City of Aspen and the Pitkin County Landfill are co-sponsoring a celebration this evening at 5 with Aces at Hallam Lake. That will include a bike-powered blender and local food and drinks. The Roaring Fork Conservancy keeps the cleanup theme going on Saturday with the annual Frying Pan River Cleanup. On Earth Day itself, kids of all ages can learn about pollution's effects on groundwater by building their own wells at the Pitkin County Library. The nonprofit Aspen Tree, which is changing its name to the Farm Collaborative, is celebrating the groundbreaking of its new farm park at Cozy Point Open Space with a community tree planting, live music, and baby animals. There's also an Earth Day fair at the Basalt Regional Library on Monday, April 23rd. Elizabeth Stewart Severy, Aspen Public Radio Environment Desk.
This week, ballots were mailed to voters in the Crown Mountain Park and Recreation District. By May 8th, they need to decide if they're okay with a property tax increase to fund park maintenance. Wyatt Orham has more.
The park has 260,000 visits annually. Staff says the current funding is inadequate to keep up with aging infrastructure and basic maintenance. The proposed tax is $14 per $100,000 of home value annually and $57 per $100,000 of commercial property value. If it passes, it's projected to bring in around $700,000 a year. The Crown Mountain Park and Recreation District stretches from Willits to Old Snowmass and goes as far east as Rudi. All registered voters within the district will receive a ballot. Wyatt Orm, Aspen Public Radio News.
Pitkin County Open Space and Trails protects more than 20,000 acres of public lands in the Roaring Fork Valley. These properties are used for recreation, to protect wildlife, and for agriculture. The Open Space Program leases out some of its properties to local farmers and ranchers. Environment reporter Elizabeth Stewart Severy recently spent a day with the newest tenants, Two Roots Farm at Emma Open Space.
Kind of our morning ritual, come in and make sure everything's got plenty of water, stayed warm overnight.
This spring, Harper Kaufman and Christian Labar are starting anew, putting down roots. They've been farming in the Roaring Fork Valley for 5 seasons, and this is the third location for Two Roots Farm. It's a pretty spectacular spot, nestled near the base of Light Hill in Emma, with views of snow-capped peaks and the sound of the highway just a couple hundred feet away. Labar explains that there aren't many properties like this nearby.
It's a rare, flat piece of ground with good irrigation water, great access with the Rio Grande bike path right there.
Plus, it's public land, owned and managed by Pitkin County. Emma Open Space is one of 15 properties that the county has dedicated to agriculture. A public process to develop a new management plan for Emma last year showed a strong desire for locally produced organic food. Paul Holsinger oversees agriculture for the Open Space Program. He says this reflects a growing trend.
Right now, the next place we need to go, especially with protecting open space and utilizing these spaces to the greatest capacity, is supporting local farmers.
At the end of last summer, Kaufman and Labar were ready to find a long-term home for Two Roots. When the county started accepting leases for Emma Open Space, they jumped at the chance. Labar says just like any other public lands issue, it's about access.
And in this case, it's providing access for farmers to farm here in a place that would otherwise be, frankly, impossible.
Two Roots leases 22 acres for a total of $500 per year. Holsinger says that's the going rate in the Roaring Fork Valley. Certainly it doesn't match what a mortgage on land like this might look like, but Kaufman says that's not a fair comparison.
When you come onto a property, it's not quite like renting a building or something, because we're pouring lots and lots of
sweat equity and money into the soil, and it takes a long time to build up a farm.
And Holsinger points out,
it does come with more hurdles. You're dealing with a public agency.
For example, Two Roots Farm hopes to put up a barn, which is needed to comply with new food safety regulations. But before they can break ground, it has to have public approval and approval from county commissioners. That proposal is open to public comment until April 25th. Kaufman and Labar think it's worth the wait, and they're optimistic that the same public who asked for more local produce will support what's needed to get it here. Holsinger points out that farms like Two Roots can help support a secure food system in the valley, one that doesn't totally rely on shipping in dinner from across the country.
It'll provide a really healthy food source. It'll be better for the environment. You know, we'll cut down on trucking of all this food that's coming in from other places.
Instead, people can drop into their local farmers market or even pick up produce right here in the Mid-Valley, which is exactly what Chef Andreas Fischbacher is planning. Fischbacher pulls up to the temporary greenhouse on his motorcycle. He owns Allegria Restaurant in Carbondale.
Come with a motorcycle down, pick up some produce and cook it in the afternoon.
He's dropped in to check out what he can expect this summer, and Kaufman gives him a tour of the propagation house, where seedlings are staying out of the winter cold.
Kale, spigarillo, sure. Lettuce, leeks, chard,
How are you looking with greens this year? What do you see?
We hope to be rolling, having them every week.
Fischbacher has worked with Two Roots Farm in the past. It's been a reliable source of high-quality produce for his restaurant.
You know, we want to keep it that way and make sure that young farmers will be able to put their roots in the soil for longevity and not just, you know, for short term.
And in the Roaring Fork Valley reality, that longevity comes with the use of public lands. Elizabeth Stewart Severy, Aspen Public Radio Environment Desk.
This is Mountain Edition on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Kristen Kay.
And I'm Allison Bechtesh. In other news, officials are prepping for a hot, dry summer, and with it, increased fire danger.
A new exhibit called Real Artists, Real Action opened at the Aspen Art Museum. A group of students from area high schools who interned with professional curators selected the works for the show.
Snowmass Village continues the discussion about Base Village's Building 6.
And Colorado is considering expanding pollution standards across the state. Stakeholders weighed in at a meeting in Rifle earlier this week.
Those stories and more news are on our website now. Take a listen, aspenpublicradio.org. Five Point Adventure Film Festival kicks off in Carbondale tonight. This year, the theme is Our Lands, Our Stories.
Megan Lynch, executive director of Five Point, says this year's theme speaks to the importance of public lands.
It really is the star of our show. So often, public lands is what helps us exist. It's where so many of these stories that really inspire our audience are set on.
After each film featuring public lands is screened, audience members will be given the coordinates of the site. The theme is in honor of Five Point founder Julie Kennedy's son, Hayden Kennedy, who died last year. He advocated for protecting public lands. Artist Sarah Yule sat with Julie and Michael Kennedy to learn about places that were meaningful to Hayden. Throughout the weekend, attendees can watch as she paints those locations at the Carbondale Recreation Center, where the festival is held. She says that her live art is meant to spark conversation.
My dream in creating this is that it inspires activism, and there's an immeasurable ripple effect.
Five Point Film Festival runs through Sunday.
This week, the Eagle County Commissioners approved a two-month extension to the existing zone change moratorium. Wyatt Orm has the story.
Those who own five or more acres in the Roaring Fork Valley's sliver of Eagle County have not been able to apply for a zone change since the fall. This will continue into the summer. The extension allows the Roaring Fork Valley Regional Planning Commission more time to mull over changes to the master plan. Commissioner Jill Ryan said getting the master plan right is important.
We want to make sure that the community likes the plan, believes in the plan, because the master plan is really the community's vision.
The Planning Commission meets Thursday at the Eagle County Community Center in Elgibel. They'll review refinements to the plan and future land use maps. Wyatt Orm, Aspen Public Radio News.
There was plenty of political drama at last weekend's state nominating assemblies. It's where party delegates from around the state make their choices for who they'd like to see running for state treasurer or governor. While the candidate pool in the gubernatorial race narrowed, Benta Berkland says it's still anyone's guess who will be on the November ballot.
Republicans gathered in Boulder while Democrats were down the road in Broomfield. Turnout at each event was strong. Scout Ennis lives in Boulder and is a Republican delegate.
You know, politics can change in a second. I mean, just last week, Walker wasn't supposed to be here, and now he's having to fight, you know, in the state assembly.
State Treasurer Walker Stapleton was petitioning his way onto the June primary ballot, but after the firm collecting signatures for him was accused of acting improperly, he abruptly switched gears. That meant he needed at least 30% of the votes from delegates like Ennis.
I think a lot of people are throwing their support behind him just because he has the money, he has the name recognition, but I don't see a lot of enthusiasm for him.
Ultimately, Stapleton received 44% of the vote, and former Parker Mayor Greg Lopez pulled in 33%. Delegate Dave DeCenso of Pueblo says he'll back the eventual nominee, but so far he says he's not impressed with Stapleton.
He might have solutions, but he doesn't articulate the problem. You want to know the ABC method? Articulate the problem, brainstorm solutions, and choose.
Stapleton touted his ability to do the right thing.
We have a bunch of professional politicians who promise the world but never deliver and have no integrity. That has never been me.
The biggest surprise of the GOP assembly was Cynthia Kaufman being dropped from the governor's race. Early in the day, the state's attorney general was booed after giving a speech criticizing Stapleton. In the end, she only got 5% of the delegate vote. At the Democratic Assembly, like in the March caucus, former state treasurer Carrie Kennedy had a strong showing. She's running for governor and got 62% of the vote.
I have people all across the state who are helping support my campaign financially. I will have the resources to win this election.
Democrat Millie Perez is a first-time delegate and former Puerto Rico resident. She backs Kennedy.
They have almost the same perspective, but Kennedy, he have more spunk.
Perez was referring to Congressman Jared Polis. He's petitioning on the ballot, but also went through the assembly. Christopher Nicholson helped Polis reach the threshold of more than 30% of the vote. He says he's pleased Polis could be the first openly gay man elected governor in the nation.
Colorado has an opportunity to send a message to the entire country that it stands for inclusion.
Some political observers see the upcoming midterm elections and these local races as a referendum on President Trump. Morgan Carroll heads the Colorado Democratic Party, and even though the base is mobilized, she says Democrats aren't taking anything for granted.
I think people are going to leave here ready to work, and they're ready. They're not assuming a blue wave. They're ready to work for it, and I think we'll see it.
But Republicans think the country and economy are headed in the right direction. Riley Buford is a youth pastor and GOP delegate from Ordway.
I wish that we would back our president. I wish we would go and make our campaign the opposite and say that we like what Trump is doing. We see what he's doing is working, and we want to stand behind and represent the president and not go against him. We can't fight against each other. We need to unify.
Other candidates who are petitioning onto the ballot, like Lieutenant Governor Donna Lynn and Republican businessman Victor Mitchell, are still waiting on the Secretary of State's office to verify their signatures to see if they can move on to the June primary and ultimately the general election. I'm Benta Berkland.
Yasamar Dance Theater is made up of dancers from Palestine and America. The company uses contemporary dance to tell the stories of underrepresented communities. They've performed at universities, museums, and UN refugee schools all over the world. They were in Carbondale for a residency with Valley Nonprofit Dance Initiative. Kristen attended a rehearsal and brings us this story of how an art form that relies on movement can have a lot to say.
The dancers from Yasamar are panting. Six of them prowl the floors of the launch pad. They're in the midst of becoming a wolf pack. Artistic director and founder Samar Haddad King watches carefully from the side. Then she gives the dancers a challenge to move completely in sync without any cues.
Because you've developed a rhythm movement-wise that's very natural for you.
And they do it. No words are exchanged. The whole group simply mirrors the watchful, stalking movements of a dancer King designates as Alpha Wolf. It's a rare occurrence for the members of Yasamar to be in the same room in any form, pack of wolves or otherwise. King describes the challenges of directing a company based on two continents, challenges that are exacerbated because she lives in Palestine, which doesn't have reliable electricity or internet.
You know, and it would be in the middle of the night for me because we're depending on the time change, 6 or 7 hours ahead. And they would be rehearsing and I would be directing, I guess, from a computer screen. And sometimes when we didn't have internet, it would be a phone or text messages.
But the group is determined to communicate, both with each other and with their audiences. The company looks at dance as a way to inspire cross-cultural dialogue. Zoe Rabinowitz is the associate artistic director and a performer with the troupe.
The main desire or impetus is to communicate with an audience, like that there's a narrative, that there's a world that begs to be shared and wants to be seen and wants to show maybe another side of a story that you may have been told about a certain type of person or people.
Peter Gilbert, the founder of Dance Initiative, scours the contemporary dance scene in places like New York and Chicago for artists that would be a good fit for a residency in Carbondale. He's brought several companies here, but this one is different.
This was the first time that there was this social and political overtone to the whole effort.
While they're in Carbondale, the troupe is working on a piece called The Keeper. It's centered on the human relationship with land and what it means to belong to a place. As Rabinowitz explains, this focus is particularly pertinent at a time of protests and violence along the Israeli-Palestinian border.
Land is a source of conflict. Land is a place of home, of landing, of safety.
While they're here, the company is researching. In contemporary dance, that means that they're forming a kind of physical vocabulary that will be used in a performance. King explains why being together for this residency is so important, pounding the wooden floors of the dance studio for emphasis.
Because we're all in the same place. You can't experiment like what we're doing now via video conferencing, text message, phone message. It's because it's so hard to do anything over those platforms, especially create art.
After Carbondale, Yaa Samar will go on to residencies in New York and Paris, which makes Peter Gilbert chuckle.
Aren't those three places the ones you think about together all the time? You know, Carbondale, New York, and Paris?
Those may seem like pretty diverse locations, but Yaa Samar is used to performing for a wide range of audiences all over the world. The company itself is made up of dancers from different backgrounds, not just American and Palestinian, but people who grew up rich and poor and with different levels of education. Amir Nazar Zouabi, the troupe's theater director, says this diversity is beautiful, but that the group came together organically.
And it doesn't feel stitched together or a social project. For me, Zoe's not a foreign American. She's a brilliant dancer, and that's the way we're working. I'm an annoying Palestinian director, and that's the relationship. You know, it's like,
Rabinowitz agrees. She hopes that the company is setting an example for cooperation in a world full of conflict. And while contemporary dance is sometimes seen as difficult to interpret, she thinks that this art form is actually the perfect way to bridge borders.
You know, every culture, every people, everybody has a dance.
And founder King sees the power of her troupe as this communication through movement and gesture instead of words.
There is an honesty that connects with people all over.
That's all for Mountain Edition this week. I'm Kristen Kay.
And I'm Allison Bechtesh. You can find more news from the Roaring Fork Valley and from all around the world on our website, aspenpublicradio.org.
Tune in tomorrow at 3:30 for Valley Roundup. Allison discusses the biggest news stories of the week with a panel of local reporters and editors. Allison, can you give us a little sneak peek into what you'll be talking about?
We've got great guests, Rick Carroll from the Aspen Times, Madeline Osberger from the Aspen Daily News, and Carla Jean Whitley from the Glenwood Springs Post-Independent. We will start off talking about Mark Hunt entering the development scene again.
Okay, thanks for listening. Mountain Edition is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.